It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 260. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness, and we've got a lot to get to here on this episode of the podcast. Manny Machado is not coming to Philadelphia. He goes to the San Diego Padres, and we'll break it all down, what it means for the Phillies and their pursuit of Bryce Harper, with Kevin Cooney, a bestie of the podcast. He's a reporter for Forbes Sports Money. We're going to former Phillies beat writer. We're going to talk to him coming up in just a few minutes and get this from all angles. Also, Mike Trout made some interesting comments about Philadelphia and his free agent status coming up in a few years. Plus, going to take a look at Odubel Herrera and his situation on the team right now, especially if the Phillies do add Bryce Harper. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But a reminder, everybody, to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. That's where you get this podcast, Hittin' Season, as well as Continued Success. And there's a brand new Dirty Inning out this week that you're not going to want to miss with Justin and Trev. A very funny one again, as usual. Great stuff from those guys. And of course, you can hear Justin and Liz Rocher on Continued Success once a week as well, breaking down all things Phillies and venturing into the generic sports world and baseball world outside of Philadelphia. So again, subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. And tell a friend, if they're not podcast listeners and they're Phillies fans, get them hooked. Grab their phone. Put us on their phone, why don't you? And make sure that they are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed. All right. Well, listen, folks, Manny Machado is not coming to Philadelphia, as you well know by now. Instead, he has surprisingly selected the San Diego Padres, who shocked everybody with a 10-year, $300 million contract offer that was more than had been reported in previous weeks. I think the most we had heard was $275 million. I think the White Sox at one point had offered something in that range, or that was the rumor anyway. But the San Diego Padres smelled blood in the water. They smelled a number of teams, including the Phillies, not going all in on Manny Machado and took advantage of it. Jim Salisbury reported the Phillies had a chance to beat the offer, but didn't. Which, you know, leaves a number of possibilities here. One, the Phillies didn't bother to get a set of numbers from agent Dan Lozano and just said, nah, we're good. Lozano told them the deal was 10 years at $300 million and asked if they wanted to beat it. And the Phillies thought he may have been bluffing, lying, and called their bluff, and it turns out he wasn't. Or the Phillies believed Lozano's numbers, but they exceeded their valuation, as Matt Klentak said. They just didn't think he was worth $300 million, which is mind-boggling to me. Or the Phillies believed the numbers and passed anyway because they now want Bryce Harper more. At some point over these last few weeks, a determination was made that Manny Machado, if he was the favorite at any point during this process, and that's what had been reported from many reputable sources, that it must have changed at some point over the last couple of weeks. But we don't know. We don't know, and we're not going to get that information out of the Phillies. We don't know if Manny Machado truly was the number one target at any point during this offseason. We don't know if he was when it switched to Bryce Harper. You know, they just said that $300 million contract exceeded their valuation, which, again, I'm not upset we didn't get Manny Machado, as long as we get Bryce Harper. I had switched my preference from Machado to Harper during this offseason because I think he's a better fit in the lineup. I think he could be a more dynamic player, and I think he's going to put more butts in the seats and be more exciting. The fans are going to embrace him more. This city would be electric with Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. And so those are all reasons why I changed my mind as well. But at no point did I ever think Manny Machado was not worth $300 million. And if you go back to the beginning of this offseason, that was the number. That was basically the low point that we thought both of these guys would get, is $300 million. We were at the beginning of the offseason thinking one of these guys could get $400 million. So this is not, I don't know, and here's my problem with Matt Klentak's comments about exceeding their valuation. I'm not so sure that that's true. I think that As the offseason went along, the Phillies lowered their number because they saw that the market wasn't as robust for these guys as they thought. And I think that they thought that they could get Machado at a lower number. And I'm not so sure that they believed that Lozano had a 10-year, $300 million offer in front of him. Maybe they did. And if they did say that they didn't think he was worth $300 million, then my question is, why did you even begin this process in the first place? Why did you even bring him into Philadelphia in the first place? Because we all knew, we all suspected that he was going to be a $300 million player. That was kind of a known quantity going into the offseason. If you looked at every website's prediction on what these guys were going to make, it was $300 million or more. Now, during the course of the offseason, that number got lowered, but at no point when this whole process started at the end of October, early November, did we ever think that Manny Machado was not worth $300 million? And it would surprise me very much if on November 1st, whenever free agency started, if the Phillies put together their numbers, the number crunchers got together and put together a number, and it didn't say $300 million, I question the numbers. Because he's absolutely worth $300 million. So that's what doesn't make sense to me about this whole thing. I don't understand why you would get involved in this process to begin with if you knew you weren't going to spend $300 million on Manny Machado. And maybe the Phillies read the market and didn't think that he would get that high and thought they'd be able to get him at a cheaper value. Okay, they were wrong. They were wrong. And so now Manny Machado is a Padre. And again, I'm not upset about not getting Manny Machado. We, as a collective here, I think, had all turned our attention to Bryce Harper weeks ago. So, you know, I do feel bad, though, for the machinist union guy who accosted Machado out in front of Citizens Bank Park during Manny's visit. And I'm going to pour another couple out for Yonder Alonso and John Jay in Chicago. Chicago signed Yonder Alonso because he's Manny Machado's brother-in-law, and Yonder can hit a little too. He's got good power, so it's not a terrible signing. And John Jay is one of Manny's close friends. As it goes, all that nonsense all off-season long about wanting to go someplace where his friends are and where his brother-in-law plays, and with Patrick Corbin, all his family being devoted Yankees fans, and that's why he was going to go play for the Yankees. None of that was true. Patrick Corbin took the money. Manny Machado took the money. Which makes me believe, guess what? Bryce Harper is also going to take the money. So where do we stand as far as Harper is concerned as we record this on Wednesday night, February 20th, completely understanding that by the time you hear this, it's entirely possible this will all be moot. That's kind of where we are right now in this process. Things are changing rapidly every day, but we got to do podcasts, and the medium is such that it's recorded, and so it's got about a 24 to 36 hour window of relevance. But nevertheless, hopefully you're hearing this on Thursday morning or Thursday evening when nothing has happened yet. Although I got to say, I really hope Harper signs as soon as possible. If that means this podcast gets a little bit dated and we got to do an update bonus podcast, well then we'll do it. Now, Bob Nightingale reported on Wednesday that the White Sox are out on Bryce Harper. They didn't want to go to $300 million for Machado. They were surprised. You listen to the comments by Kenny Williams that he was shocked that Manny went to the Padres for 10 years, $300 million. I don't think they got an opportunity to beat that price. The White Sox, I don't think, got an opportunity to match San Diego's offer. And I still think that maybe the White Sox feel their offer, even as it stands, was better than San Diego's, with some vesting options at the end of an 8-year deal that would have gotten it to 10 years and probably well over $300 million. But they were disappointed, so you wonder, are they motivated to go after Bryce Harper? But it doesn't sound like they are. Reporters out of Chicago are also saying that it doesn't appear as though the White Sox are in on Bryce Harper. So if the White Sox are out, well, what about the San Francisco Giants? A couple weeks ago, there seemed to be a lot of momentum after Harper met with officials from San Francisco's front office. But to hear Andy Baggerly tell it, a Giants beat reporter for The Athletic on KNBR, doesn't sound like the Giants are in on Harper right now either, at least not on a long-term deal.
You know, I think if you're handicapping this thing right now, the Giants have gone from like maybe 20% chance to maybe 2% chance. I think that the Phillies are the team that's most serious about him, and it's pretty clear that he's I think, looking for any reason not to sign with them. And from everything I understand, he really is comfortable in Washington and would like to go back to Washington if that's available to him. And we know that old man Lerner can be made to do whatever Scott Boras wants on occasion.
So from 20% to 2% on Monday, but on Wednesday, the New York Daily News' Andy Martino tweeted this out, and everyone started getting nervous again. He said, quote, "It's unclear how big a contract the Giants will have offered to Bryce Harper, but hearing a continued sense today that they have a shot at him and the Phillies have a tough road to get it done." I mean, Andy, did you lend Scott Boras your phone again, or are you just copying and pasting his texts into your tweet deck? I mean, and this is the thing about this offseason too that has driven everybody crazy, is a Giants beat reporter who you would expect to be plugged in, he says the Giants have a 2% chance of landing Bryce Harper. Now, understanding that things can change over the course of a couple of days, barring anything big changing, now you've got Andy Martino from the New York Daily News, who does not cover the Giants, who couldn't be further away from the Giants, putting out that speculative tweet that probably has no basis in fact whatsoever. But because it's the latest rumor, because it's the latest bit of news, because it's 2 days after the Baggerly tweet, clip you just heard, everybody now takes the Martino quote to be the most accurate. Right? I'm still going back to the two-day-old quote from the guy who's actually covering the team. Now, that doesn't mean San Francisco isn't a real player in this and that maybe something has happened over the last couple of days, but that's not what Martino is saying here. So this is clearly Boras using the media to try and drive up the Phillies' price. The Giants, by all accounts, are not prepared to go 10-300 for Bryce Harper or over that. And it's going to take more than $300 million to land Bryce Harper, whether it's for 10 years or 11 years or whatever. John Heyman speculated on Wednesday on Tuesday, just after the Machado signing, that the Padres could make a run at Harper too. But that was later debunked by San Diego reporters, so it doesn't seem like the Padres are a real alternative. So who's left? Well, we're going to talk about the Nationals in just a minute. But Buster Olney said on Tuesday on his Baseball Tonight podcast that he saw no indication that the Nationals were involved when he was in town, when he was covering the team a couple of days ago. And he said on Wednesday on the podcast, quote, "It would not shock me if when it's first leaked out through one of Scott's guys in the media, Harper's deal is going to have the number 4 in it. I still think the Phillies get him." Now, that's an interesting comment. When it has the number 4 in it, are we talking $340 million? Or is Buster only thinking Bryce Harper's getting a $400 million contract? Because I don't know what he's smoking if he thinks Bryce Harper is getting a $400 million contract. MLB's John Morosi said he still thinks Bryce Harper is going to Philly too.
I think it's going to be the Phillies. To me, the reason is this. They, I believe, are going to have the biggest offer, and they can also give Harper something that the Giants can't, which is an opportunity to win right now. The Giants, to me, San Francisco certainly is a wonderful place to play. They've got 3 championships this decade. We know what a phenomenal organization they have been and will continue to be. But Harper would go there in year one with very little chance to win. And that's a difficult way to begin your tenure as a free agent, to go in with what you know is kind of a losing situation.
He also said the timing of a Harper leakage of this story coming out could be hilarious.
We know of the rivalry between the agents of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. That's kind of a big subplot of this particular hot stove season. I am on record as saying, when is the Harper story going to break? Well, it's going to break about 3 minutes before the Manny Machado press conference begins.
The introduction has a contract. That's about right.
And then you'll have that crew of reporters all barreling out of the room to go tweet news of the Harper signings.
I mentioned the Nationals a minute ago, Bryce Harper's old team. So what about the Nationals? Well, Todd Zielecki reported on Wednesday early evening, that sources told MLB.com that the Nationals have no plans to give Harper a mega deal comparable to Machado's 10-year, $300 million contract with the Padres, which Zielecki says is likely ending any chance for Washington's longtime face of the franchise to remain with the club. The Nationals offered Harper a contract worth $300 million over 10 years before the end of the 2018 regular season. Harper and his agent Scott Boras rejected the deal. So Jason Stark, in an interview on 97.5 earlier this week, Baggerly and others have indicated that that Harper is not exactly enamored with coming to Philadelphia. And I have my doubts about that reporting, but those guys are plugged in, so let's just say that it's true. If what makes Philadelphia so much different than D.C.? D.C. is, it definitely is not as intense a sports city, but it's the Northeast. I mean, it's not that different, frankly. I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me that Harper would have such a strong reaction to Philadelphia as opposed to the District of Columbia. It's not that different. You're living in the same general area of the country. The fan base is definitely more hardscrabble. It's definitely more critical. You will hear boos in Philadelphia, whereas you probably would not hear boos in Washington, D.C. But you also have fans who care in Philadelphia more than they do in Washington, D.C. And you have a bunch of, I don't even know who they are, but talking about Bryce Harper being too nice of a guy to survive playing in Philadelphia. I don't buy that at all either. I think that's a lot of nonsense. So it's Washington people hoping that Philadelphia doesn't get him because they don't want him in their division, is what that is. So it still doesn't look like the Washington Nationals are going to get back into the mix here. And it doesn't look like the Dodgers or the Cubs is going to get involved at this point, at least not to the level of a 10-year, $320, $330 million contract. So here's where the Phillies stand now. They have to wonder if they're bidding against themselves or wonder who they're bidding against, because it really doesn't seem like there's another team out there that is willing to go as high as the Phillies. But can they take that chance? Can the Phillies take that chance and miss out on Bryce Harper? They can't. They cannot miss out on Bryce Harper. I mean, there is a point at which it becomes too much. I mean, if you're talking like, you know, anything over $400 million, like if you're talking 10 years, 400, that's probably a bit much. I would go to 400, but only on like a 12-year deal to kind of smooth out the AAV. But I'm not going any higher than $400 million. Because in the beginning of the offseason, I thought Harper could get $400 million. So I'm fine with that. I'm fine with 10 for 350, 10 for 375, I'm 12 for 400, that's fine. Anything more than that, that's my walk-away point. But it's high. My walk-away point is high, and it's probably much higher than the Phillies' walk-away point. But I wonder how high the walk-away point is, and that's what we don't know. Now, certainly Scott Boras is not going to jump back to the Phillies after Machado signed with the Padres and say, okay, you ready to do a deal? He's gonna milk this. Now, I hope that doesn't take us through the weekend. I hope that he realizes pretty quickly that there's not another team out there that wants to do a long-term deal. And unless Bryce Harper wants to sign a four-year deal or a five-year deal or even a one-year deal to go back to Washington or something like that and try the free agent market again next offseason, it's the Phillies. The Phillies are the whole ballgame, it seems. But the Phillies can't really take the chance and call anybody's bluff at this point. So, again, if Harper wants more than 10, 375 or 12, 400, I wouldn't blame the Phillies for walking away. But I'm not going to do the whole, what would this offseason be? And I'm not going to do that, you know, right now. Like, would this offseason be a failure if they don't get Bryce Harper? I'm not going to answer that question at the moment. I'm going to wait for the Harper thing to play out before I make a judgment on this offseason. But I'm not going to call it a success, you know, right now, based on what they've already done. I'm going to give Klentak a chance to get him before I pass judgment. Because I know that I had some harsh things to say about the whole exceeded our valuation comment regarding Machado, because I do think it was tone deaf. I do disagree with their number. I think, you know, that comment was certainly probably a negotiating tactic with Boras, but it was still a bad thing to say, especially to this fan base, where this fan base has not embraced Matt Klentak. It has not embraced Andy McPhail. It has not embraced Gabe Kapler, because they don't speak the language of this city. They don't speak the language of the Philadelphians. Andy McPhail, as you heard us talk about on the Sunday night podcast with Justin and Liz, that McPhail just seemed detached, just seemed uninterested. Like he was just there because he had to be. Marshawn Lynch at the Super Bowl, you know, and Matt Klentak, I think, has made a lot of good moves. I can't say that there's a ton of bad moves that he's made so far this offseason, but he doesn't let you feel good about stuff. He doesn't take you along with him during this process. He talks to you like he's the guy you're going to go take your taxes to. He talks to you like he's your accountant. I mean, and that's fine. He's an analytically driven guy, but he's not speaking the language of this town. And Gabe Kapler, you know, for he had a lot of on-field mistakes. He's had some off-field issues this offseason as well, and he's under a lot of pressure. He doesn't speak the language of the Philadelphia fan. He speaks in a much more new-agey kind of way, and that's just his style. You can't ask these guys to change who they are to speak more Philadelphian. You know, it's just not going to work that way. But they do have to understand what Phillies fans need to hear. They need to be soothed and talked to in a certain way. They need to feel like, you know, that you're all rowing in the same direction, and they're not getting that. And the whole, you know, exceeded our valuation thing was just so tone deaf to Philadelphia fans who already aren't sure if this team is going in the right direction as far as moving to an analytically driven organization. Now to his credit, Klentak was asked by reporters if he would walk away from giving $300 million to Harper, and he said, "I won't comment on that. I'll say this: every player is different. They bring different strengths, weaknesses, risks, rewards, etc." And that's true. And maybe now the shift that we have seen is because John Middleton has taken the reins. Because really, that's what's needed to happen. John Middleton, at this point, it's all about money. It's all about the contract. It's all about the deal, and I gotta believe that he really wants Bryce Harper. He knows how important this is. He knows how important it is to get Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. And he has seen, he speaks the language of the Philadelphia fan. Now, you could say the stupid money comment may have been, if they don't get Bryce Harper, may have been the worst comment that will be uttered along with exceed our valuation. Those two will go hand in hand as far as all-time foot-in-mouth comments in this city. But at least John Middleton understands what the fans wanted to hear. Now, they haven't followed through on stupid money. Their trades have had more impact than the free agent signings, which is bizarre because the one thing this team has as an advantage over everybody else is money. You figured they'd use that like a sledgehammer. But it sounds as though with exceeded our valuation that they're still using the calculator to you know, make sure that they don't go $10 million over what they think a player's worth. In the long run, that might be a good way to go to do things. When you're talking about free agents like Mike Moustakas or Jake Arrieta last year, when you're talking about Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and the fan base is expecting this, I know that they don't want to make an emotional decision. We're there now. They're going to have to make an emotional decision about Bryce Harper. And here's the solution. Call up Scott Boras right now and say, let's do 10 years, $330 million. You beat Giancarlo Stanton's number. You become the highest paid player in baseball history. You're going to make $33 million a season on average annual value. You're going to beat Manny Machado's number. You're going to get everything that you were looking for here. You're going to be the number one guy in baseball, and we're offering this to you, even though no other team is coming close to this right now. And maybe they've made that kind of an offer to Scott Boras, and they're waiting to hear back. I don't know. But that's what I would do. 10 years, $330 million, because you know what that does? If Harper is reticent to come to Philadelphia in any way, shape, or form, it greases the skids a little bit. Get him to camp happy. Make him feel good about coming to Philadelphia. Make him the highest paid player. You know, make him feel good about this whole process. Give him a win. Here's the deal. If the goal is for the Phillies to, quote unquote, win these negotiations, I think at this point they're doing it wrong. I don't want the Phillies to, quote unquote, win these negotiations. I want them to win Bryce Harper. I think getting Bryce Harper on this team and winning him over with a deal that allows him to save face and can make him happy and feel good about coming to Philadelphia is a win for everybody. And the Phillies have enough money and enough payroll flexibility to do it. It's not like you're butted up against the luxury tax and that extra $30 million over the span of 10 years is going to hamstring you. Or even $50 million over the span of 10 years. That's $5 million a season. The Phillies have plenty of money to at this point, what's the difference between 10,300 and 10,350? $5 million a season. They have that. Just get it done. You don't need to win the negotiations. You don't get extra credit for getting him signed under $300 million at this point. And guess what? If you sign him for 10 years and $350 million, you can still get Mike Trout in a couple of years, probably. And I'll tell you the other thing. If you do want to get Mike Trout, then giving him 10, then giving Harper 10 for 300 doesn't put you in a better position to sign him than 10 for 350. So you're not helping yourself out by saving that kind of money. I know that the Phillies don't want to approach this emotionally, but the fans are emotional at this point. There will be holy hell to pay if this doesn't happen. The Phillies need to, if they're trying to win a game here, they need to put that aside. John Middleton needs to get on the phone with Scott Boras and say, let's do this. Let's knock this out. Make your phone calls to all the different teams. You got to make your phone calls too. But at the end of the day, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make him the highest paid player in baseball. We're going to make him a 10-year, $330, $340, $350 million offer. We want him in camp tomorrow. Let's get this done. We'll give him an opt-out after 4 years, 1 year earlier than Manny Machado, so they don't hit the free agent market again at the same time. We'll let him hit the market first, so he'll have that over Manny Machado. And on the plus side, Bryce Harper gets to come play for a team that's going to compete for the World Series this year, not in 2021, like Machado's going to have to wait. That's a victory for everybody. And that's, I think, a deal's there to be had if that happens. I don't know. Again, I'm not on the inside. Nobody's on the inside because the Phillies are locked down tighter than Fort Knox. But it seems to me that, you know, Boras is going to do what Boras is going to do, and he's going to make a lot of phone calls, and he's going to try and turn over every rock and touch base with every GM. He's probably going to touch base with Washington and offer them a chance to beat anything the Phillies offer. But at the end of the day, the Phillies really should be the high team here. Just make the deal and get Bryce Harper down to Clearwater so that he can start his Phillies career as the highest paid player in baseball. Coming up, I'm going to talk to Kevin Cooney, former Phillies beat writer, now with Forbes. We're going to talk about Harper, Machado, and a little Mike Trout as well. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk about all of this stuff with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, the hot stove, and, you know, I wish we could get to some spring training stuff, but I'm not sure we're going to make it there, at least not yet, not until Harper signs anyway, is one of the best friends of the podcast, Kevin Cooney. He's a reporter for Forbes Sports Money. He also hosts a podcast with Mike Kern called Two for a Buck. Follow him on Twitter at Kevin Cooney. Kevin, how you doing, buddy? Welcome back to the show, bud.
I have confirmation of a report that the minute this is done, I'm sure something will happen that'll make this entire conversation,
yeah,
like, total and mute.
It happens just about every time I record something. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to be back at it again tomorrow night, I'm sure.
Law of averages.
That's right. You know, let's get into this, because before we get into Machado and Harper specifically, one of the things that has been one of the hallmarks of this offseason has been the proliferation of so-called rumors by some of the national baseball writers, like Heyman, like Nightingale. Andy Martino's been really bad as of late. You know, just it seems as though anytime someone has a stray thought pop into their head, or some source of theirs, quote unquote, wants them to tweet something out, it gets tweeted out. And I just can't even begin to describe the frustration level that I know a lot of fans have with Heyman and with Nightingale and some of these guys who it just seems are tweeting out mental diarrhea at this point, Kevin. And I know what's great is I don't think, you know, none of the beat guys are doing it and some of the national guys aren't doing it. You know, there's some kind of discipline there, but some of these guys are just, they're out of control, man. I mean, and what are your thoughts on kind of how the media, especially some of these members of the sports media, are handling trying to fill the information void vacuum that we're experiencing here?
Well, and I preface this by saying, you know, look, Heyman and Nightingale are guys I met on my time along the beat, and I like both of them personally. Both are good guys. But I think this is, and you know this from, you know, reporting, you know, for other, and, you know, on other matters, this is the age we live in. You know, in the vacuum of the 24-hour news cycle, everybody feels like they have to go and get clicks and everything, and that's exactly what I think some people have done here, you know, to fill the void. And, you know, you can separate the national writers, as you mentioned, into a couple of items. There are the ones, and I'll mention Stark and Rosenthal and you know, a couple others who have been almost suspiciously quiet. Through this whole time. And I think what people don't necessarily grasp that part of being a reporter, and what I did for a long time and everything, was gathering information and maybe not sharing everything until you're absolutely sure. I think that we've entered like a machine gun phase now, in a sense where some people get it and just start spraying information out there, and some of it will end up being right down the road.
Yeah.
And as long as it gets clicks, as long as it fills the public interest, they're getting in that void. And I think that's what's happened here in a couple cases. Look, this offseason's been different because of the length, and I think that's what's kind of prolonged this this monotony, if you will. That the free agent cycle, while last year was bad, this year feels worse because of the two high profile guys being out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that what has happened is we are now just at a point where the fatigue of everybody is set in, and I think the anger, and maybe that's not the right term, but the frustration of all these reports is now coming out clearer.
I am working on a piece for The Good Fight, which will be out as soon as Bryce Harper signs with whoever it is. I've been chronicling the social media saga of Bryce Harper specifically here throughout the offseason thus far, and it's going to be a long piece because I've got a lot of stuff in there, and it's really amazing when you put it all together, when you start back in November and look to where we are now, because we're so hungry for information and because so little of it has been coming out. I understand, like, if, let's just say, you know, if one of these guys' agents is handing you information, it's really hard, I would imagine, not to go with it, because here you have information from someone who is deeply and intimately involved in the negotiations. But at the same time, there has to be a recognition of, I'm only telling one side of the story here. This is kind of slanted information. This is biased information, or it's heavily geared to favor or do the bidding of one particular side here. But that's not being, you know, if you're going to do that, you need to name the source. That needs to be part of it.
And, John, there's also a complicating factor here. Okay, we always talk about, you know, the agents feeding stuff, and there's no doubt that there's agents that feed stuff. And there's executives from teams involved in negotiations that are trying to get their noise out there, okay? There's also the third option here. And the third option is the executives from other teams who are either trying to do the smokescreen and inflate the price for, let's say, the Phillies. If we're going to take Harper and the Harper example, okay?
Yeah.
In theory, there is an idea that the Phillies are the only ones really in this market. You know, that the Giants are there if he wants to go short term, and you know, there was talk of yesterday with the Padres and all that on Tuesday. In reality, there's also executives from other teams who may float their names out there with no intention of signing Bryce Harper, talking to Bryce Harper, whatever, doing one, Scott Boras a little bit of a solid favor in case they need help down the road with Boras, and two, let's say it's a division rival. I'm not saying that any of the four teams in the division are doing this, but let's say you're a team, you know, a division rival. It helps you if you can get the Phillies to bid against yourself and to jack that price up, and maybe, you know, they're already maybe going to get Harper, but maybe it takes some of the financial resources they have away from them down the road, and you think it makes it better. This is what a reporter has to guard against. What are the intentions of the people who are spreading some of this stuff in that kind of a mode? And I think that's where the filter has kind of been broken down in a lot of cases for some people. And I think it's wrong. You know, look, you know, again, I think there are a lot of reputable guys out there, you know, Kenny and Jason and all them. And Bob and John are good guys. I just don't think that necessarily this winter has been necessarily a great one for the profession as a whole, though.
Let's take a look at some of the stuff that came down on Tuesday. And, of course, that includes Manny Machado going to San Diego for 10 years, $300 million. So as we wait for Bryce Harper news to drop, what are your thoughts on Machado going to San Diego? Do you think that the Phillies ultimately decided that they didn't want to beat the Padres' offer? Do you think that I speculated earlier that I wondered if they actually knew precisely what the Padres' offer was. And there are a couple of different possibilities that come out of that. They either didn't know the offer because they didn't care, there and just decided that they weren't going to go any higher than what they'd already said they were going to do, or they knew and decided, man, that's too rich for our blood, which also doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me when you think about how frequently and how aggressively it seemed as though they were pursuing Machado, or that, you know, they had moved on in their minds to Bryce Harper by that point. So just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on Machado going to San Diego and where the Phillies stand right now.
Well, if you're me, I'm surprised Machado went to San Diego because I mentioned this in a tweet yesterday when I'm at work and I see all this stuff happen. And the first thing was, okay, I want to play for the Yankees. Well, that didn't happen. I want to play on the East Coast. Well, you know, he wasn't in love with the options he had on the East Coast. I wanted to play on contender. Well, the Padres, at least in the immediacy, don't look like a contender. I mean, yeah, you look at what the Dodgers have, you look at what the Rockies have, you look even what Arizona can put out there. I would not consider them in that class. You know, certainly. Now Arizona takes a step back with, you know, losing Goldschmidt. But, you know, it just seemed like the Machado, it was an ugly, if you had come to me on November 1st and said, man, Machado's going to be a San Diego Padre, I would have immediately ordered you for a drug test.
Yeah.
But in the end, I think for San Diego, look, they're a market that needed a little bit of a jump.
Yeah,
you know, they needed something to give that team a boost, and I think in this sense it's a good move for them. For the Phillies, you know, the messages that were coming out, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, were so mixed. And what I mean by that is this: I mean, you know, look, up until 24 hours ahead of time, and we don't know if this is Dan Lozano floating this, if it was Phillies people floating this or whatever. You know, Dan, 24, 48 hours ahead of time, when you had the Rosenthal thing saying, hey, you know, the Phillies front office people still really liked Machado better than Harper.
Yeah.
If you gave them preference. I think that one of the interesting things when, again, we peel back the layers of the onion on this in a couple weeks or whatever, it's going to be, how did the dynamic go down? And I'm sure somebody's going to give it, either Salisbury or Gilb or Breen or all them. How did this go down where the Phillies seemingly at some point here flipped and decided that Harper was the guy they were going to spend the money on?
Right.
And was it a management decision? Was it a front office decision by the baseball people? Was it a owner's decision? And then if it was an owner's decision, there's the logical question of, should the owner be making that decision?
Mm-hmm, right.
Should the owner be the guy at the forefront going, you know what, we're getting Manny Machado because it's going to put more fannies in the seats. And, you know, I don't think... And look, it gives them a left-hand power hitter if they get in all that. If they get Bryce Harper in that sense, I should say, if it's Harper, I'm going to be fascinated to see how this all went down. And getting back to the other point, I think for Machado, they probably decided that they could maybe get a little better bargain with Machado, and when the number got to a certain point, they backed away. I don't think they could back away on Harper now. That's the one thing that's the dynamic out of this.
Yeah, I want to get into Harper more here in just a second, but just to kind of put a button in the Machado thing, I just the phrase exceeded their value. The Machado $300 million exceeded their valuation of him. To me, the reason that didn't make any sense, and you know, you can argue what the motivation was for making that statement. He's probably trying to tell Scott Boras, hey, you know, we're not going to bid against ourselves with Harper here. Yeah, but I mean, it was inartfully said, and it's possible that, you know, at one point during the offseason, the front office valued Machado more than that. But if Middleton came in and said, I want us to go after Harper, well, now you got to figure out a way to kind of gracefully get yourself out of the bet it appeared you had made, because everybody had a strong suspicion at the start of this offseason that these guys were going to cost $300 million or more. It's only as the offseason kind of droned on that it seemed like the price started to drop. When this thing started, Machado and Harper were $300 million guys easy, and there was talk in early November of one of these guys getting $400 million. So, I mean, it's not as if they went into this thinking, well, maybe we can snag Manny for $250 or something like that. That's where this all kind of hit me sideways. It was almost just like, you know, they knew they had a number, which I assume was probably in the 250 to 275 range, and Chicago said Lozano said we have somebody that can beat that, and they were just like, meh, okay.
I agree with you, John, but let me play the devil's advocate.
Sure.
Thing, there was so much talk of deflation in this market when it seemed like that the offers were not real hot, okay, mm-hmm. for either Harper or Machado. And everything was so stagnant, really, from Christmas until a week or two ago, okay?
Yeah.
That maybe in the Phillies' mind, it's like, oh, hey, we're not having to go outbid anybody. Nobody else is knocking down the door to go get it. We're not going to pay $300 million, you know?
Yeah.
And during that time is when they could have made a change of, look, if we're going to pay this, we're going to pay for the one that gets the bigger box office bump. I don't agree with that, but I think your basic point is right. I think that this number was, I think if you would, again, go back to December 1st and say, okay, the contract's going to be 10 years, $300 million, that was not going to be a eyelash batting moment.
That's a fair number.
Was not like we were going to get floored over.
Right.
And, you know, now the question is, does Scott Boras get a little greedy here because he feels like he's got the market, you know, the dance floor to himself? And we know the egos of the two agents involved here between Lozano and Boras, and it's going to be natural that Boras wants to get the top deal. But again, you know, there was a little bit of a pause when I heard that comment from Klentak on Tuesday. And again, it could be caught trying to call a bluff on Scott Boras and saying, hey, look, we do have limits. Look, we just walked away from the guy we thought was our number one target. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very dangerous game to play. And they better play it real careful because I think that you can get burned very easily on this.
As we're looking at Harper now, they do have to get Harper, and we've said this. You know, we're in an off season now where the Phillies have made improvements, and they are an improved team, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the off season is a success. Just based on that, when you consider the fact that I think, you know, the Middleton stupid money comment just threw I don't want to say cloud because that's not the right word, but it framed this entire offseason a certain way where it got you thinking the Phillies were bound and determined to get one of these guys. And so now there's only one left, and it's Bryce Harper. And even though I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Todd Zielecki reported on Wednesday night here that the Nationals have made it clear to MLB.com they're not looking to make a 10-year, $300 million offer for Harper. It sure doesn't seem like the Giants want to do that either. The White Sox say they're out. The Padres aren't going to do two deals like that. I mean, unless the Dodgers or Cubs come swooping in at the last minute, it's hard to see where another $300 million deal is coming from. In my mind, the Phillies should just make a 10-year, $330 million deal, even if they are bidding against themselves, Kevin, to allow Harper to come in and save a little face here, to get him feeling better about coming into Philadelphia, because we hear a lot of stuff about maybe this not being his number one destination.
Well, and I think the other key in this would be timing of the opt-out. You know, look,
sure.
Machado opt-out is 5 years. If you're the Phillies, do you put the opt-out at 4 years?
That's exactly what I would do.
Make it a little more appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Make it a little more appealing for Harper. You know, and you mentioned the Middleton thing. And this was in the next couple of days, this sounds overdramatic, and it probably is. They're a better team. They're far better than what they were in August and September last year.
Certainly.
They really are. Okay? They could use another starting pitcher. They could go get Keuchel, maybe, and fill that void. They could go maybe could kick the tires on Kimbrel and still be really good. I don't know if that puts a lot more fannies in the seats. I really don't. And this is kind of what, fairly or not, was the magnet force of this whole Harper Machado thing. Who was going to be your alpha star? who was the guy that was going to bring an event feel back to the ballpark every night?
Yeah.
With all due respect to JT Realmuto and Andrew McCutchen, Andrew McCutchen was that maybe 3-4 years ago. He's not that now under under most circumstances. That's not going to happen. And it also was a test of the commitment, more so of John Middleton than of even Matt Klentak or Andy McPhail. John Middleton made the stupid money comment. He put them in a horrible spot, okay? He put the two baseball guys in a brutal spot where if they didn't get one of these two guys, the mass public, and I get, you know, I've had people say on Twitter, well, the casual fan may be offended, but the real fan knows what's going on. All the well good. The real fan is drawing 20,000 a game.
Yeah.
They need to draw 35 to 40 anymore to get the casual fan back interested, to give that that feeling that that ballpark is something special to go down to again, and that the Phillies, quite frankly, aren't the third-place team in their own town.
Yeah.
And if you don't get Harper now, those words will echo. It will really echo. And then if they don't get Harper now, and you combine it with what Klentak said on Tuesday, that's really bad.
Yeah.
And that's where, look, from a baseball standpoint, there's a lot of arguments about whether Bryce Harper over 10 years is going to be worth it. And it could be a disaster and all that. But they made their choice at the beginning of the year when they started this process and made it as well known that they were going to be active in this, that they need to go get one of these guys, and now they have to finish the deal. Otherwise, it's going to linger for them. And people connect this, and I know I'm rambling here. Well, you got Arenado next year, and you may have Mookie Betts in a year, and you may have Trout in 2 years. And Trout may be a different case, and I get that. But if you don't get one of those two guys, I think there's we've heard so much of the whispers of, I don't know if I really want to play in Philadelphia on both Machado and Harper. That's going to still be out there next year. It really will for either one of those guys.
Right. If you can't get Harper or Machado with the kind of money that you want to throw around now.
And also the familiarity in a sense of playing in this area for a number of years. Machado playing not far from here in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And obviously Harper playing here 9 times a year.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. It's not going to get any easier to convince somebody to come to Philadelphia next year if you miss here. You mentioned Trout just a second ago. Earlier in the week, Trout talked about his future with Angels reporters and was asked about the potential of signing a long-term deal there. He was really uncomfortable answering the question. I'm going to play a quick clip here. You really need to see this on video at some point if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't yet to see the body language of his arms folded, but you can tell he really doesn't want to talk about it.
Have there been conversations yet about extension?
I'm not going to talk about that, but like I said, I come and get ready for spring, get ready for the season. You know, I don't want to comment on that.
Do you want to be here past 2020?
I don't want to comment on that, but like I said, I enjoy it here. You know, I'm having fun. Obviously, losing is not fun, but, you know, I enjoy playing this game.
Do you want to be here past 2020? I don't want to comment on that, I think is telling. He also was asked about Harper and Machado before Machado signed, and he talked glowingly about what it's like to play in Philadelphia.
I grew up in Philadelphia, around the area in Jersey, obviously. But I know I'm an Eagles fan. I know how we are. You know, when they're going good, they love them.
So, Kevin, I mean, it almost sounded like he slipped there and put a in front of Eagles fan. I know that's got a lot of people with tongues wagging. And Todd Zielecki reported that Trout's comments reverberated throughout the front office. Now, he's not a free agent for a couple years, as we all know. What do you think the Phillies front office is actually thinking with regard to Trout right now? Do you think they're actually thinking about him, making plans with him in mind for 2 years from now? And does that factor at all into what they're doing right now?
I could just picture the drool in the Spectrum Field complex there. Look, it's all well and good to think about Mike Trout, and it is. And the Trout window could really open next year because if you're him and you look at the Angels and their farm system is awful and they're saddled with bad contracts and, you know, you just had a managerial change and you know, it just seems like there's there's not, you're also the second place team in that market. You know, it just in baseball. Yeah, you play in the American League West. The Astros aren't really going to go anywhere. You know,
right?
Texas becomes more appealing when their new ballpark opens up and their farm system is on the way back. You can look at it from a different. There's a lot of arrows that point Mike Trout out of Anaheim. I mean, you could just see it. I mean, this is building here. The one thing I have trouble thinking is Artie Moreno is going to let him go easily. And, yeah, because, again, the Angels need that star power in that market. Otherwise, they're totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
If you're the Phillies, I don't know if you can plan in February 2019 for whatever's going to happen with Mike Trout.
No, I don't think you can.
it may develop organically next winter, and you may be able to look at, although, let's be honest, you know, a couple big pieces of the farm system are now gone. You would have figured would have been part of that,
mm-hmm.
with Crawford and Sanchez. And you would have to delete a lot more if in any potential deals go forward if you're going to trade for Trout. I just don't think you can operate like that. You know, people started this winter with the idea that maybe they could sign both Harper and Machado. You know, I don't think whatever happens here should preclude them from Mike Trout in 2 years. Would they have to look at Hoskins in that range too for a long-term deal if they feel that way? Yeah, but, you know, Mike Trout's down the road. You got to take care of now. And the main thing you got to do is, you know, get back into relevancy within your own city before you can even start dreaming about having Mike Trout walk in the door with, you know, his Carson Wentz jersey and a Joel Embiid hat on, you know?
No doubt. And the Phillies have already spent a lot of capital in pieces traded away, young pieces traded away, and in the money they've already sunk into some of these different players to make themselves relevant right now. That's why passing on Bryce Harper would be absolutely inexcusable at this point, especially when it doesn't look like there is another suitor that really can match what the Phillies should be willing to match. Just depends if they don't exceed it, their valuation, Kevin.
And, John, I mean, you know, we've mentioned, I think Middleton is the guy who really has the most to lose. But
this is Middleton's game, I think, at this point, Kevin, isn't it? I mean, it's his decision.
Yeah, and I think this also throws to another end of this. I mean, John Middleton's going nowhere. I mean, that's pretty clear. You know, even if he angers everybody, he's not going anywhere. If I was Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail and this didn't happen, I'd be worried.
Mm-hmm.
I would, because, you know, they're not the forever guys here.
Yeah.
You know, they may have jobs. I'm not saying they're going to get fired or anything. But we've seen how fans in this area turn on GMs and presidents they feel are too cautious.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
They like guys who take risk. They love Howie for that reason. In a strange way, they loved Ruben when Ruben was that way.
They did.
Back in 09 and 10 and all that. If you're not that guy, and there's never been, I don't know if this is fair or not, there's never been a lot of love for this part of the front office. I don't think there's been a feeling one way or another. I don't think they like the Kapler move, fairly or not. And I think that this was the winner that they were going to be judged on. And, again, they made some really good moves. But if they don't get the big piece, that's where I think they're going to have the problems.
Well, hopefully this will come down in the next couple of days. Kevin, we can all move on with this, and hopefully we'll get a resolution to this situation that'll be best for everybody, and that's Bryce Harper coming to Philadelphia. Folks, make sure to keep an eye out for Kevin Cooney's stuff for Forbes Sports Money, and also check out his podcast with Mike Kern called 2 for a Buck. Follow him online on Twitter if you don't already, at Kevin Cooney. Kevin, good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks for coming on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
All right, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little Odubel Herrera. If the Phillies do get Bryce Harper, what are the Phillies going to do in the outfield? Could Herrera be on the trade block if that happens? All that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. Let's talk a little Odubel Herrera here. If the Phillies do get Bryce Harper, What are they going to do in the outfield, and how does Odubel Herrera play into that? We got a little news from Clearwater on Wednesday. Odubel Herrera restrained a hamstring while he was running the bases down there, so he's going to be out of action for just a little while, but it doesn't sound like it's anything too worrisome, and that'll give some of the other guys a little bit more reps in center field, specifically Roman Quinn, but we'll kind of see how that plays out. Salisbury speculated in a piece on Wednesday that if the Phillies do get Harper, they will likely have to move an outfielder. And he said it could be Odubel Herrera. And that, I know his name popped up at the beginning of the offseason as potential trade bait, and it never happened. Of course, Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco never got traded either. If they get Bryce Harper, you would have Herrera, Roman Quinn, Nick Williams, and Aaron Altherr all battling for the majority of playing time at one position, center field. Altherr, Herrera, and Quinn can all play center field well. Williams, very much less so. I know he played a little bit in the minors, but he's not a good center fielder. He's just not a good defensive outfielder, period. Williams does have options, and he could be sent to the minors to start the season if they get Harper, but man, that would be a bitter pill for a guy who worked really hard to improve his plate discipline last year and work his way out of the minors, and he was a productive bench guy last year. I think that would be unwise to send him down to the minor leagues. So I do think he's a guy that could be dealt, or he could be your fourth outfielder because he was such a good pinch hitter last year that he could be, he could be your fourth guy with Odubel Herrera starting. If they trade Herrera, you're essentially giving the job to Roman Quinn and Altherr to split, I would imagine. Quinn would probably get the majority of the starts out there. He's a switch hitter, so you wouldn't necessarily need to platoon, but you'd probably mix in Altherr for a couple of starts here and there. But, you know, Quinn's an injury risk, a huge injury risk. That's probably why they didn't trade Odubel Herrera to begin with this offseason. It's one of the reasons why he's not going to be handed the center field job, because the talent is there. We've seen how exciting a player he is. But you can't trust him to stay healthy. And Altherr had a horrible season last year, and he's getting a little bit too old now to be considered a young player with upside. Again, he could split time in center field with Quinn if Herrera goes, but does that give you the production you need out of that spot? And as far as trading Odubel, I think I'm holding on to Odubel Herrera depending on the return. Unless somebody offers you something really good, I'm going to hold him and put him in the outfield in between McCutchen and Harper. I mean, that's a pretty dynamic outfield in that case. And then you have to decide, okay, what do we do here? Do we send Williams down to the minors, and do we have Aaron Altherr and Roman Quinn as our backup outfielders? Or do you keep Nick Williams on the bench, given how well he did as a pinch hitter last year, and Roman Quinn? Now you're a little bit too left-handed heavy in your outfield. Aaron Altherr is a right-handed bat that could help, although Roman Quinn, again, does switch hit, so he could hit right-handed as well. There's a lot of different options here. My thinking would be that you probably have to try and either trade Nick Williams or Aaron Altherr at that point. And I would obviously love to keep Williams, but Williams gets you more than Altherr does. And if you keep Altherr, again, you have a right-handed hitter with some pop who can play all three outfield positions and plays defense much better than Nick Williams. Williams, to me, would seem to be the odd man out in that particular case, because I do think the Phillies still like Altherr, and I think they like the defense that he can provide out there. If he's going to be your fifth outfielder, he's not going to get a lot of ABs anyway. You're using him mostly as a defensive replacement and a good base runner. And Nick Williams is a decent base runner, but Altherr has the edge in defense. So some decisions will have to be made if the Phillies do get Bryce Harper. They're not going to be able to keep all of these outfielders around. And Roman Quinn, he does have, I think he has options as well to go back down to the minors, but I don't think the Phillies would do that. So Altherr does not. Altherr cannot be sent to the minors. He is out of options. Also, the Phillies have set up their pitching rotation for the first few games of the Grapefruit League schedule, and it's basically going to be the Lehigh Valley staff. Cole Irvin will start on Friday, followed by Eniel De Los Santos, Drew Anderson, Jojo Romero, and Ranger Suarez. Those guys might get a second time around through the rotation as well. All right, let's move on to our stat of the week as we wrap things up. Keep looking at last year's FWAR or BWAR for Bryce Harper and saying he's not worth the money that the Phillies are considering paying him. You got to look past more than just the previous season's wins above replacement from one website. That's not a sample size you can look at and make a determination on a guy's value. You got to look, you got to project forward. But if we are looking back, it's important to remember just 2 years ago in 2017, Harper hit 310, 413, 595, and had an FWAR of 4.8 with 29 home runs in just 111 games. He would have gone well into the 30s in home runs had he not hyperextended his knee, running over a soaking wet first base bag. Also, in the second half last year, Harper hit 300, 434, 538 with 11 home runs in 65 games. And for people who complain that Harper has never carried a team to a title, yes, he had a poor 522 OPS in his first ever playoff series at 19 years old. In his last three playoff series, he hit a combined 245, 379, 528, good for a 907 OPS. Bryce Harper's not the reason the Nationals never won a World Series, by the way. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Kevin Cooney for coming on the podcast once again. Reminder, folks, if you haven't done so, get on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Subscribe to the podcast, rate and review the show. I'd greatly appreciate any feedback that you have. And I appreciate everyone who's already done the five stars and the subscribing and all that stuff. Really appreciate all the work you guys put into helping us grow the podcast and you guys telling your friends and your family members about the pod. Again, that goes a long, long way to helping us get seen by more Phillies fans on the interweb. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.